Chapter 3. The Beginning. Liza at Open AA Meeting. My name is Liza, and I am a very grateful recovering alcoholic and addict. To be recovering means I once was powerless over alcohol and drugs. It is in that painful, unmanageable life that my story begins. Recovering means that one moment, one hour, one day at a time, I remain substance-free. I will share the struggles, the hardships, the shame, and guilt, and the eventual sobriety, recovery, and gratitude. Today, the pain swells in my throat. My tears are for my son, Charlie, who has relapsed. I am trying to be strong. I am starting with my family history because it certainly has a lot to do with how I perceived the world and how I perceived myself. I did not have a bad childhood. I had a father who worked a lot, and I admired him very much. My mother, however, had a very limited capacity to love, show love, or receive love. So as a child growing up, the way I was disciplined was with shame, verbal abuse, and lots of criticism. This affected my belief system. I thought there was something wrong with me. I thought that I was unlovable. I ended up searching most of my life for someone who could love me or change the way I felt about myself, not realizing that it was my responsibility. I learned to be very independent at an early age because all my needs were shamed in my childhood. I started working as a car hop at 12 years old so I would not have to ask for help. Asking for help was difficult throughout my life. When I needed help, I felt shame. The concept of surrender in recovery from addiction was difficult for me. Later, turning my life over to a higher power was extremely difficult, but proved to be life-saving. Now I find myself living powerless over my son's addiction. Life has come full circle, and I am experiencing firsthand the pain my mother had to cope with over my addiction. My life did not become unmanageable overnight. In high school, I succeeded, and I had a lot of friends. In relationships, I dated either alcoholics or men that I felt I needed to take care of. That is how I found my worth, by taking care of people. I felt like I had no value. In high school, for the first time, I experienced what alcohol could do for me. An older person bought us some beer. The taste was awful, so I held my nose and drank 4 cans. I remember feeling this did something for me. I felt very confident. I felt my inhibitions leave. I liked the way it made me feel. It did something to me that my sisters never experienced. My sisters are not alcoholics. I also experimented with smoking pot and taking acid. All the things that kids back in the 70s experimented with, I tried. My mom had a hippie for a daughter. I have an alcohol and opioid addict war hero for a son. He is suffering with the grace of a higher power. This power has done for me throughout my entire life what I cannot do for myself. I am very worried for my son. That son, Charlie, is missing. I met my future husband in a hippie circle. I really looked up to him. I admired him. To be with him, I gave up my needs, wants, and desires. I was very happy in my job, but he wanted to live in California, so off we went. We stayed there for a while, then traveled around, then got married. After that, we moved to North Carolina, which is where my first son, Robert Aaron Redden, was born. There was not a lot of alcohol or drug activity during that time. I did not drink or use drugs while I was pregnant. We then moved to Lawrence, Kansas, but eventually ended up in Hermosa Beach, California, where I worked in San Pedro for a while. These moves were always about what my husband needed and wanted. Wherever he was happy, I told him, I would be happy. I tried to believe it myself. He had a very negative view of the world. Making him happy became a mission. While living in California, our relationship turned abusive. I began walking on eggshells with my husband. I felt the same stress growing up with my mother. Whatever I tried to do was never good enough. I believed if I tried hard enough or wanted it bad enough, I could make a person happy. I could change them or make them love me. I was unlovable. My core belief was a thinking error. After the first episode of domestic violence, we moved back to Kansas. My husband moved us out in the country. Domestic abuse flourishes with seclusion and isolation. I was happy to be closer to my sister and parents. Charlie Adam Redden was born here. Charlie, who now finds himself powerless over the same addictions that once plagued me. Charlie is my second child. Charlie has been missing now for 4 weeks, Liza said as she paused her story. Her eyes moistened as she collected herself. Then she continued. Now, back in Kansas, the domestic violence, which had been mostly verbal, escalated to physical abuse. I just hung in there, living in fear, believing something's going to be different. I always went to work and put on the front that everything was okay. I talked to no one. I felt so much shame due to someone else's behavior. I was so embarrassed. I protected him. People were starting to notice, though. The abuse had become increasingly more difficult to hide. I was working at a law office. I would come to work with stories, lies, like I was at a ball game and a ball had hit me. I was so humiliated. I did not want to tell anybody. Back then, people did not talk about those things openly. You did not hear about safe houses or anything like that. I was not doing a lot of drinking or drugs. I was just going to work, coming home, and trying to make everything okay. I never could. I moved out 2 or 3 times, but I always went back with the promise from him that things would change. Unfortunately, things did change, but not for the better. The violence grew worse. I came home from work one night, and everything that I owned was completely destroyed. I had nowhere to go and nothing to my name. I left everything behind, even my car. A beautiful lady named Nicole took me and the boys into her home. To deal with all that pain and grief, we started going out on Wednesday nights to drink. I always drank differently than everyone else. I could not have just one beer. I would drink until I was so intoxicated that I could not even stand up. It was during this time that my husband started stalking me. John would break into my home. If I was out with friends, he would wait for me in the parking lot. One night, he broke into the house and attacked Nicole and me. He left before the police came. John always ran. To avoid putting my friend in danger, I made the decision to leave Nicole's home. I got my own apartment. My husband, John, would constantly torment me by breaking into my apartment. John terrified me. The police would come. I always refused to press charges out of wanting to protect him and fear that the violence would get even worse. One night, the police were called to my apartment. When they arrived, they found me unconscious. The officer told me that if I did not press charges, they would. The officer confronted John that he had to be out of Bourbon County by April or he would go to jail. So he moved to Pittsburgh, Kansas. There is a purpose to everything. This happens in everyone's recovery story. As their lives become unmanageable, the emotional part of this illness gathers intensity. Choices are made. Once you make a decision, it is like jumping into the river's fast current. You flow on to the next event. You will see this in not just my story, but in everyone's story of the progressive flow of addiction. A short time later, I also moved to Pittsburgh. In a thinking error again, I believed that leaving the past friends and problems behind and relocating to Pittsburgh would serve as a sort of geographical cure, making everything okay. Pride and memory had a fight. Pride always wins. For a period of time, there was no violence. I took a job at a bar. Drinking every weekend, I often stayed out to early morning hours. One night, John came and he got violent at the bar. The next night, he would not let me leave to go to work. I called the police. The officers made John leave my home, and 2 days later, he moved back to California. While John was in California, he continued calling me. I had so much pain and guilt, and it increasingly took more and more alcohol to take the pain away. I realize today how unavailable and selfish I was with my children, only thinking about my own pain and my own needs. There is a promise in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous that says, "We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it." The other promises have come true, that we will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. The fear of economic insecurity will leave us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Those promises have all come true. The regrets that I have are for hurting people along the way, though not knowing at the time how much. Recovery has given me some insight into that as well. Recognizing how my boys dealt with their pain, Robert masked his through achievement, and Charlie with substance abuse. My husband, still living in California, started sending me cocaine and methamphetamine through the mail. I started selling to people I had met in Pittsburgh. I could not stand to be alone. The only way I could get rid of the loneliness, the guilt, and the shame was to drink and do more drugs. Robert and Charlie needed me. I could not be the mother they needed. I dealt with my pain the only way I knew how. More drugs and drinking. I got to know the circle in Pittsburgh that was involved with drugs. I drank heavy. Every night when I got off work, I was surrounded by people who were my using friends. I avoided my family. I was so ashamed of what I had become. I could not stop what I was doing. Addiction is that way.